Jamie Locker with you here on The Green Zone. Here's a text you want to receive from your significant other on a day that's definitely not your wedding anniversary. It just happened to me. From my wife. Happy anniversary, by the way. Do you know the mental gymnastics I had to do to figure out what the heck she... I was like, no, we got engaged in August. Our first date was in September. We got married in July. Not even close to any of our kids' birthdays. They're all born in the winter.
I was gonna say, is this a kid's birthday?
So I did have the courage, Locker, to text her back going, what?
How long did it take you to send that?
A while. I was like, do it. It's like running through all key dates. Like, nothing.
You're killing me. What was it? Or should we take guesses?
Today, June the 2nd, I'm glad my wife remembers this because, I don't know, June 2nd, 2013 was day one of Rough Rider training camp in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Why is that date significant? That was the first ever episode of The Green Zone. Was today, 2013, 13 years ago today. And I think we hit the air at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that day, isn't it?
That's pretty cool. She wrote it down, obviously, and it probably popped up. Has she ever sent you that text before?
Probably, but I did a little quick math. We're at about episode like 3,300 and some.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. That's a lot of radio. So thanks to everybody, all the contributors, all the guests, the producers of The Green Zone, callers, texters, those who told me I suck at my job. All of you.
Those texts still come in.
They still come in, but yeah. They're listening.
Yeah.
They're listening. As a former program director of mine did tell me, on the first ever text I ever received saying I sucked at my job, it's like, oh, that's tough to like read that.
Was that a day one thing?
That was 6:30 Ched when I was a fill-in host on Inside Sports.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he said to me, at least they have an opinion. And I went, what? And he said, at least they have an opinion. That means they're listening, they're engaged, and they have an opinion. Good or bad, at least they have an opinion. I'm like, all right. And I've held that on to that one.
That's actually a really smart thing to say to a broadcaster.
It really is. I think I was 23 or 24 when I did that show. I was so nervous. But
you need to be concerned when you're not getting engagement.
So there you have. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. To my wife for reminding me today was the 13th anniversary of the Green Zone's first episode from Griffith Stadium in Saskatoon.
2013.
And then the Riders went on to win a Grey Cup that year. They won the Grey Cup. We thought it was us. And then, of course, we knew it wasn't because it took 12 more years until they won another one.
And then this is like year 13, too. So 2013, year 13.
So away we go here on the Green Zone. Thanks again. For all those who've contributed and weighed in and called and all that stuff here on the Green Zone over the last 13 years.
And thank you for the angry texts as well.
Hey, at least you have an opinion. Jamie and Locker with you. And we've had a lot of debates over the years on this one topic alone. The CFL's top 50 list. It comes out once a year and then fans get angry because their favorite player is ranked too low. Or a team they hate is ranked too high. Or Nathan Rourke is on the ballot. And some people voted him number one last year after having a down year in 2024 and being out of the league for a couple of years. And I was a little put off. But Nathan Rourke put it on the field last year and proved, yeah, I'm pretty good at football. I had Nathan Rourke number one on my ballot. I think a lot of people, if not everybody, will have Nathan Rourke number one on the ballot. So, who should be number two? 1-877-332-8255 is the fan line here on the Green Zone. Who should be number two when it comes to the Canadian Football League's top 50 players list? Locker is going with a much-debated quarterback today. You think it should be Davis Alexander?
I really like his game. I was kind of blown away by him last year. And I think he was a little bit banged up in the Grey Cup, right?
And so, the playoffs.
Yeah.
Some concern for what he was. He only played 8 games in the regular season last year.
Well, and I also think there's a case to be made for what he was able to do as kind of the only guy. That's kind of why. I mean, obviously, it takes a team to get there, but he's kind of like the guy in Montreal. And so without him, where are they? They're kind of in Red Blacks territory last year, no?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Montreal without him, they're about a 500 team. With him, they were perfect, right? They were darn right perfect. Davis Alexander, should he be number two?
I don't hate the Bo Levi Mitchell pick. I don't even hate your Kenny Lawler.
I pick Kenny Lawler. My ballot has Kenny Lawler number two. The catches he made last year, like Bo Levi Mitchell was their MVP. He got the Hamilton nod and then went on. He was the finalist against Nathan Rourke for most outstanding player. But some of the catches that Kenny Lawler made last year would not have been caught by 95, if not 99% of the receivers in the Canadian Football League.
Well, even Bo has said that. Bo's like, Kenny's a vacuum cleaner. I can just throw it in his basic area. But you still, there's, even those throws have to be thrown a certain way to be catchable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I don't think that discredits Bo's contribution to the success that the Ticats had last year and that the two of them had last year. That's why I didn't put Kenny in my number two spot or Bo.
1-877-332-8255. A couple of texts coming in. It is Brady Oliveira, Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He was the number one player last year in the Canadian Football League. On the top 50 list. So, okay, shuffle him back to know he had another great season. And I would like, you know, the top two players in the Canadian Football League being Canadian. I like the look of that. Brady Oliveira is number three on my list, right behind Kenny Lawler. So, yes, Brady Oliveira deserves to be up there. Bo Levi Mitchell was in my top five. I also had Keon Hatcher in my top five, his season last year from Nathan Rourke. Like, sick, was it 1,650 yards? It was an unbelievable season for Keon Hatcher. You could, a lot of running backs, like Dedrick Mills had a great year. Justin Rankin had a great year.
Yeah.
James Butler had a great year.
I mean, the Justin Rankin conversation's interesting because Edmonton didn't do well last year, but there's also a case to be made for how well he did with such a horrible team. As well, no.
You could throw. Then here's the thing with this ballot: it's wide open, and I went through it yesterday on the Green Zone. So this is how it works: you have to pick. There's mandatory positions you have to pick.
Yeah.
So you have to have 5 offensive linemen. You have to have 4 defensive linemen, 4 linebackers, 4 DBs, 3 receivers, 2 running backs, and 1 quarterback.
And you rank them, right? You do?
Yeah. So okay. When you go through all of that, you only have 16 extras left because you only submit a top 40 ballot, and then when they do all the math, 50, and then they make the top 50 out of all the points. So when you go through it, you only have like 16 extra spots. So you add 5 quarterbacks and 5 more receivers and a couple more running backs, and then you're running out of room. It gets interesting on, and then you have to rank them. And you do have guys who are like, okay, he's there, he's there, he's there. And then you're like, but he deserves to. I moved about 20 guys around going, no, he needs to be above him and all that other stuff. Like Jamarcus Hardrick. You have to have the best offensive lineman in the league in the top 10. You have to.
Yeah.
He's the best offensive lineman in the league. He's got to be a top 10 player in the league.
But then you take a look at it. And it's even more convoluted when you start considering things like we were just talking about Rankin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was not on a very good team, but he had huge numbers last year. Should he get a little bit of a bump or a higher consideration ranking-wise based on that? Trevor Harris took a team to the Grey Cup and won. Why is he not higher up?
Well, someone, was it Tony who texted in? Tony texted in. The quarterback of the Grey Cup champions should be number one.
Well,
actually,
yeah.
he thinks number one because, well, he beat Nathan Rourke in the West Final, so why shouldn't Trevor Harris, who, by the way, broke a record in the Grey Cup on completion percentage. It was unbelievable what he was able to do in that Grey Cup championship game, so where do you have it? A Nelson is asking, who's your top defensive player? Matthew Betts, might tell you, he was number six on my list. Roland Milligan Jr. was number eight on my list. So I had two defensive players in the top 10 and a couple just outside. Like Darnell Sankey's a player I have a lot of respect for. He was up in probably my top 15 or so. A lot of great defensive players. Tyrese Beverett of the Montreal Alouettes would have been in that conversation as well. Jameer Thurman should be on the top 50 list. He was last year. Last year, if you're curious on riders that I'm looking for, Logan Ferland was 37, Jameer Thurman 43, Trevor Harris 24, Roland Milligan Jr. was number two, so I think Rowe will fall back. Harris should be up. Ferland will be probably around that 37 mark, I think. Jameer Thurman might be higher than 43. You're probably going to add in Jamarcus Hardrick will be added in there. Sam Emilis was not in the top 50.
That's surprising.
He better be in the top 20 tonight. If he's not in the top 20, we need to have a chat with some voters.
So how much weight do you give the previous year? A lot, right?
A lot. Then it's consistency. It's the top players in the league.
Then
right?
There should be a couple more riders in the top 50.
I think so. 1-877-332-8255. Who should be number two behind Nathan Rourke on the CFL's top 50 list? It's on TSN tonight. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie Locker with you here on the Green Zone. UBS Arena will be home to a new look all-star game for the National Hockey League next year, 2027. They are going to Long Island, UBS Arena, and it's another international format, though 3-on-3 tournament.
I like this. I like that fifth team, too.
It'll be Canada, Finland, Sweden, United States, and the world. And yes, Russian players will be part of Team World.
Okay.
So Nikita Kucherov, etc.
That's a scary team.
You throw everybody in the mix, like Dreisaitl and Kucherov and Stutzla. Yeah,
Germany?
Yeah, Nico Hischier from Switzerland.
Yeah.
That could be a solid crew for that group. So that'll be next February. Of course, you have the World Cup in 2028 after the Russian international ice hockey announcement on Friday last week.
Yeah.
I predicted in 2028 there's going to be a Team Russia in that 18 tournament. I'm pretty sure about it. I know it's a case-by-case basis for the IIHF, but the National Hockey League isn't that way. So I imagine they'll announce Russia will have a team in that World Cup of Hockey in 2028, and then another all-star game format in 2029. Then, of course, it'll be an Olympic break again for 2030. But next year's all-star game is Canada, Finland, Sweden, U.S., and the rest of the world competing in a 3-on-3 tournament. And there is going to be a skills competition, but here's
for the kids,
the
right?
Twist. It's a U-25 skills competition.
Okay.
So players under the age of 25 will do the skills competition for next year's all-star format.
Michigan segment.
Hope you're having a great Tuesday afternoon, Saskatchewan. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. Coming up just past 4 o'clock, we are going to have the Vice President of DAZN Canada, Deidre Dion will be on with us. If you recognize her name, you probably should. She won a bronze medal for Canada at the Olympics in aerials back in the day. Now she has been a television executive with Rogers Sportsnet and most recently made the move over to DAZN Canada as they jump on as a rights holder with the Canadian Football League streaming rights for Saturday Night Football beginning next season. Deidre Dion coming up just past 4 o'clock. If you have a question for the vice president of DAZN, some of the things you're pondering about their streaming service, maybe pass it along so we can pass those along to her coming up later on in the show. But we continue our CFL tour with a stop in Calgary, Alberta, with Mark Stephen. He's the voice of the Calgary Stampeders, QR770. Mark, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Season's for the Stampeders just a couple of days away here, so it's kind of exciting.
I'm just curious, how many Stampeder people, fans, media talk about that Calgary was the only team the Rough Riders didn't beat last season?
Well, it's been brought up more than once, yeah, I have to say, so there it is. But you know, and with also, if you want to throw in some trash talk, there's only one team that won more games than the Stampeders last year, so there you go.
It is. That's the parity last year. The top six teams, if everybody doesn't remember, the top six teams were only separated by two wins. The Rough Riders at 12 and then a couple of teams at 10 and everybody smashed in between. How much parity, Mark, do you see this year? Because I think Edmonton should be better. Ottawa should be better. Who knows what Toronto does with Chad Kelly? I am so intrigued about what's ahead this year.
And the East and the West.
And the East and the West. Like, this year, it's going to be firecrackers.
Well, I guess we got to see. First of all, I do think, you know, the Lions and the Riders are the top teams, and the Stampeders are probably just a notch below. Edmonton, I'm quite looking forward to what they do. I mean, I think they've put together a good team. I think they've got their quarterbacking situation all straightened out. So Winnipeg's a team I wonder about. I mean, they've got a bunch of playing Hall of Famers, but have they stayed 1 year too long? And I guess we're going to find out here pretty soon.
Mark, is it a better league when Calgary and Edmonton are more competitive?
I guess, you know, it's good for here, whether it's good for the rest of the league, you know, I don't know, but it certainly is exciting that they're both, you know, in a good spot at the same time, which hasn't happened a lot of late, to tell you the truth. One team has usually struggled and the other's been decent, but it sure can't hurt, that's for sure, to have those two teams playing nose-to-nose and maybe playing in a West Final.
Of course, last year the Stampeders went from those 6-5 win seasons back into double-digit wins with 11. How much of that was due to the arrival of Vernon Adams Jr.?
Oh, certainly a lot of it was. He has stabilized the quarterback position, got a lot of production, you know, 4,200 yards and 21 touchdown passes. But they stabilized some other positions as well, including some upgrades at receiver, some upgrades along the defensive line. So they kind of stepped out of their comfort zone and became quite active in free agency. But certainly it all started when they acquired Vernon Adams shortly after the 24 season. And he made a big difference. And you know what? I think he's still got room to grow. I would say last year was a good season, but I think he's capable of adding to those totals.
Should we give any credit to the coaching staff? And also, did Dave adjust how he handled the double duty as general manager head coach last season? And is he a big part of the success from last year?
Yes, he is, because, you know, he realized that they just had to find a different way to do things. And sometimes, you know, it's tough when people have had success and are locked into a sort of a format that they don't want to change things. But he recognized things had to change. They had to do it a little differently. I mean, you know, at the end of last year, 24 season at least, they let go two longtime coordinators who have since surfaced elsewhere. But they really, you know, he had, took it upon himself to make the change and recognize the need for change. So those are the, you know, hallmarks of somebody that's willing to bend, and I think it paid off.
Of course, in the background, the last couple of years, he had John Huffnagel as kind of that advisor. I was shocked when he was announced as a member of the Argonauts front office. Mark, I don't know how you felt about it, but what did you think of Huff's, you know, ride over to Toronto after helping Dave take a phone call every once in a while on advice the last couple of years?
I was quite shocked, too, to be honest with you. I didn't think he'd be back with the Stampeders after 25. I just thought, you know, maybe his time had come. He was a little bit doing some of the things that Dave was doing. A great resource for sure. But I thought he'd go off into retirement. Not another three-year deal at age 74, but that's what happened. So, yeah, I was quite surprised that he carried on and is going to extend his time in the CFL for another 3 years.
Defensive lineman Jalen Hutchings is back, three-year deal, big return after a brief tryout for the NFL. He's going to be a big part of this team this year.
Oh, he is for sure. And, you know, that last half of the year, they had Flo Ormelad, another talented end on the sidelines. The two of them are now in camp. They both have been working out, but they've got a bit of a decision to make this week exactly. They can get them on the field. They're comfortable in that, but I don't know if they're comfortable if they can survive a whole game because neither's really had much of a training camp. But Hutchings will make a difference. He was dominant inside last year, and once he's on board and back to a 100%, look out. He's going to be a real force inside.
Of course, with Hutchings, he was down in the NFL, of course, just signed like last week. To return to the Calgary Stampeders. By the way, I wanted to redo my top 50 list to put him on it because
I agree.
I was like, man. But you also have, you know, Reggie Bagleton, Florin Ormelade recovering from significant injuries last year. Where are those two vets at in terms of expected return for 2026?
Bengals had some kind of a setback. We're not exactly sure. So he's a little ways away. Initially, I thought he was going to be back for the game when the Riders are here, actually, on June 20th. But I would say it's pushed back. I would say it's possible that Flo Ormelad's on the field this week against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. If not, again, I think he'll return for the game against the Riders on the 20th because the Stampeders, after this game, have a week to bye.
Okay. Dominic Rimes, he did not return, so he's calling it a career mark. How big of a blow is this to the receiving core?
I think it was fairly big because, you know, he was a very talented leader and a guy that, you know, made some big catches, but, you know, his production total, he had 6 touchdowns, but maybe not the catches that they wanted. And, you know, him and Vernon Adams worked together. I certainly would like to have seen him back, but sometimes, you know, you just got to move on. And I think with Reggie Bagleton coming back as well, there was a bit of a financial squeeze as well. So it's unfortunate. I wish him well wherever he goes. He's a tremendous persona and will be a hit wherever he goes.
Who's going to be the breakout guy? Who should Rider fans be concerned about in the receiving core, outside, of course, of the Philpotts and the Bageltons, et cetera?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Well, here's what Philpott told me, so I guess I'll throw him in there. He said he wants to be an all-star this year, so there you are. He had about 800-and-something yards last year, had a big year. He wants to move forward. Watch for little Eric Brooks, though, a little returner, receiver. Last year he was doing a double duty, both returning and receiving. He was more of a receiver who did some returns. This year they've got Tyreek McAllister to be a principal returner, so Brooks will be able to concentrate strictly on the receiving game. I mean, I'm sure he'll return a few kicks, but watch for him. I think he's going to really take off here.
Mark, a bit of a disconnect with the fan base in Calgary. I'm curious if you're anticipating maybe a return to more bums in seats at McMahon this year.
Well, I hope so. They say that in the off season that they experienced the best growth they've had since COVID. I mean, COVID, it did to a lot of teams, not just Calgary, but it really, they lost a huge number of ticket holders, people that realized, you know, all that time and all that money they spent, you know, they can survive. They can do other things and go to football. So they suffered quite a downturn and they had to work hard to get it back. And I think this year has. I think the Grey Cup is certainly helping as well. So I hope, the crowds have returned to what they were, because there has been a drop off over the last few years for sure.
Mark Stephen, voice of the Calgary Stampeders from 770 QR in Calgary. Let's go to top 50 players tonight, Mark, on TSN. They make the end announcement. I imagine, are you in agreement with all of us that Nathan Rourke will be number one tonight?
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure he will be. He'll be number one. After that, we'll just have to wait and see. I did have a vote, and I had a quarterback for Saskatchewan up there pretty high because he makes a big difference. So
did you have Trevor number two, or who did you have number two?
No. Rankin from Edmonton.
Oh, see? I moved him back. I had him up there. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can put him in front of Brady Oliveira because of the consistency. So I think he's number seven on my list. I debated that.
He's ready for, to me, he looks ready for the first thousand season in CFL.
I'm with you, Mark.
I really believe that. I really believe that. Yep.
Oh, Justin Rankin's a special athlete. By the way, if you're doing CFL fantasy drafts, I'm high on Justin Rankin because of his ability.
Unbelievable. That's interesting. So, you're in Calgary, right?
Yeah. Okay. Right. I respect them. As long as the Elks finish 1 point behind the Stamps, I don't really worry about it. I'm just going to say that, no, he's fabulous. I think he's on pace, for a thousand season. I think he could become a thousand club member.
That's interesting.
And he's got the perfect quarterback for it because Cody loves checking it down if something's there to his running back out of the backfield. Well, Mark, it's going to be a thorough, I think it's going to be an absolutely banger of a season in the Canadian Football League. Thank you so much for the preview. And enjoy having a football game to watch this weekend because in Saskatchewan, we have to wait.
Yeah, well, you get an extra one down the line, so don't worry about it. So there you go. But anyway, yes, I'm really looking forward to it. The weather, which has been dreadful here for the last few weeks, is going to break. So I hope we have a fabulous crowd on Friday and look forward to hearing from you guys again.
That is Mark Stephen from 770QR in Calgary, the voice of the Calgary Stampeders. They open Friday night football against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at McMahon Stadium, which will play host to the Grey Cup in November. More coming up here on the Green Zone. I skipped over this day in sports. Let's do it next because it's a memorable moment in sports. It might be the worst officiating blunder of all time. Next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Hepbridge Farm remembers.
Behind the left of Fannis, and
on this day in sports history, I think this might go down as the biggest blunder in officiating history in all sports, anytime, any place. Because there is something somebody can do in sports that is so rare. In the history of baseball, it's only happened like two dozen times. A perfect game. And on this day, June 2nd, 2010, one out away.
26 up, 26 down. Ground ball, right side. Cabrera will cut it off. Galarraga covers. He's out. No, he's safe. He is safe.
He missed the base. He's out. Oh, my goodness, Jim Joyce. No.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Oh, my goodness.
What a travesty. What an absolute travesty for Armando Galarraga.
Hearing that again gives me just nausea.
He apologized, didn't he?
After the game, he made himself available to the media.
No, I did not get the call correct. And there's nobody that feels worse than I do. I take pride in this job, and I took a perfect game away from that kid over there that worked his ass off all night.
Oh, that's got to be the worst. Like, it was clearly out at first. Galarraga covers. He caught the out for his perfect game. And the look on his face, like he turns.
Yeah.
And he just had a smirk, and he went back to the mound. I would have lost my mind.
Yeah.
I probably would have got tossed.
Well,
but he got it. They call it the 28 batter perfect game, or 28 out perfect game for Armando Galarraga.
The good news is Jim Joyce didn't need fertilizer for his wife's flower beds for a couple years.
Oh my goodness! It's got to be the worst one. The perfect game taken away from Armando Galarraga, and of course, if they would have had video review back then, Daryl Davis, they would have called it a perfect game.
Yeah, Daryl.
See? There are times for video review.